Spiritual learning is not like linear. It's not like you begin here and then you end here. Spiritual learning is like a spiral. So what happens in a spiral is that you're talking about the same subjects. You're talking about the same books. You're talking about the same pastimes. But as we discuss more and more and more, then like a spiral, ultimately you're getting to the center, in the essence. So in spiritual life, it's not so much about learning more and more things, newer and newer philosophical points, esoteric pastimes that no one has ever heard before. But rather it's about hearing the same things, discussing them, but in a deeper and deeper way, and trying to actually understand it in its essence. So that's why sometimes it's good on an evening like this that we just have questions and answers and discussion and see where it goes. Maybe your questions can be about philosophical points in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Maybe your questions may be about the world we're living in and how Krishna consciousness relates to the world. Maybe your questions may be to do with the practice of Krishna consciousness and what it actually means to live this knowledge and to actually awaken love for Krishna. Maybe your questions will be about the movement that we're living in and the community that we're living in and how different things may happen and how we react to those things. So all these questions could be there. So we'll chant an invocation just to get the blessings of our acharyas and Krishna. And in the meantime, I'll give you the opportunity to think of any questions you may have. Om Jnana Dimiranjasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Tamlam Bhayate Girim Jatkripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinakalam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishwaram Namah Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Kalina Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so over to you if you have any, if anyone wants to. Okay, great.
What is the purpose of Arnashram Dharma?
What is the purpose of Varnashram Dharma? The ultimate purpose of Varnashram Dharma is to become Krishna conscious. There are different types of Varnashram Dharma. One type of Varnashram Dharma is known as spontaneous Varnashram Dharma. Another type of Varnashram Dharma is known as materialistic Varnashram Dharma. And another type of Varnashram Dharma, which we follow, is known as Devi Varnashram, or Transcendental Varnashram. Spontaneous Varnashram means, even if you have no plan, the world will naturally organize itself into divisions. Naturally, tomorrow, if we say, for example, okay, all of you are one team, and you have to achieve this task. Naturally, one person will become the leader. One person will become the, you know, the worker. One person will figure out how to fund it. Naturally, that happens. So some people say, no, no, there should be a classless society. There's no such thing as a classless society. Just as you have different parts of a body, you need different parts of a society. So one type of Varnashram is spontaneous. Another type of varnashram is known as materialistic varnashram. And what happens in that type of varnashram is that society is divided, but it's divided in such a way that it gives materialistic benefit to the individuals who organize it. Therefore, you find even in India today, Srila Prabhupada criticized, this is what we know today as the caste system. And that type of varnashram is meant for materialistic gain. So spontaneous varnashram exists for the purpose of getting something done. Materialistic varnashram exists for the purpose of materialistic gain. But daily varnashram exists because ultimately it's a system which should ultimately lead you to God consciousness. So therefore, why is someone situated as a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, or Vaishnava, or Sudra? Because that becomes the most natural position within which they can then give their heart and mind to trying to connect to Krishna. When Gajendra was fighting with the crocodile in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, although an elephant is much stronger than a crocodile, by far, what happens? After thousands and thousands of years of fighting, the elephant is becoming weaker. How can the elephant be becoming weaker? It's so much more powerful. So why does it become weaker?
Because it's out of its element.
Because it's out of its element. Because it's not an animal of water. And when you're not an animal of water, it doesn't matter how powerful you are, you will begin to lose your shakti, your strength. So varnashram exists so that we can maintain our strength, we can maintain our peace of mind. And when we maintain our strength and peace of mind, then we can fight with Maya. And so that's the purpose of varnashram. Do you want to ask something further on that, or does that?
What is the dharma of the soul?
The dharma of the soul?
Yes.
The dharma of the soul is explained. Jiva Sarupa Hoye Krishna Aditya Das. What is the Swarup, the very original position of the soul, which is Krishna? So basically, everyone in this room has two dharmas. We have a Sanatana Dharma and we have a Swadharma, every single one of us. The Sanatana Dharma is your eternal duty, the duty of the soul. And your Swadharma is your duty while you're in this body and mind. So what does Krishna say to Arjuna? The most successful person in this world does both dharmas side by side. Some people pursue their spiritual dharma, their Sanatana Dharma, but they ignore their Swadharma. They don't achieve perfection. And some people, they fulfill their Swadharma, they situate themselves in Varnashram, but they don't forget that they have an eternal duty as a soul to find Krishna. So you have to do both side by side. And so, we all have these two dharmas. Yes?
What is the relation of Manu and Vaishnava?
What is the relationship between Manu and the Vaishnavas? As in, you mean the ruling Manu?
Yes, his position and our relationship.
Okay, yes. So if you know the history of creation, then there is... Then Brahma is born from the lotus of the navel of Vishnu. And then Brahma is having different children. First he has ten mental sons. He didn't have 10 mental sons. He had 10 sons born of the mind. Right? And then what happened is that those sons were born in for the purpose of procreation. But then somehow or other they were not procreating. And then later on Svayambhuva Manu and Satyarupa appeared. So Manu means the fathers of mankind. So there's an original Manu. There's 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. You understand? So day of Brahma is called the Kalpa. And in one kalpa, there are 14 manus. Each manu encompasses one manvantara. So a manu is like a father of mankind, like a procreator, the one that initiates humankind. The word man comes from manu. And therefore, manu is not only procreating, but manu is also then giving the rules by which mankind should live. So then we have manu samhita. And so the relationship between manus and us is that manu is our ultimate resource, our existence back to manu, who's one of the procreators of this world. And manu also gives direction for the structuring of the world that we're living in. But then what happens is that as things degrade, then following the original Manu Samhita is not so practical. Like today, if you would read the Manu Samhita, practically it would be impossible to follow. And therefore, what the Acharyas do is they take the essence of the Manu Samhita and then they present that in us, to us, in a way that we can follow it today. Like that. Yes.
Can we amend the rules and principles given by Manu?
So, whether it's the rules of Manu or the rules of Shastra, we have to understand there are two things. There are principles and there are details. Right? In any Shastra, there is a principle and a detail. For example, if I say playing harmonium in a kirtan, is that a principle or a detail?
Detail.
If I say singing Hare Krishna, is that a principle or a detail? Principle. Principles means things that must remain no matter at all times, place and circumstances. But a detail is the application of a principle in the particular time, place and circumstance in which we're living. And so, the Manu Samhita or any Shastra for that matter can't be changed in principle, but it can be adjusted in detail. However, it can only be adjusted in detail by someone who has mature spiritual vision. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada made adjustments. Srila Prabhupada allowed ladies to live in ashrams. That was not done before. But Prabhupada adjusted the detail because, okay. So Srila Prabhupada made many, many adjustments in detail, but he never adjusted the principle. The principle always remains. So in Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says, two things spoil devotional service. Niyam agraha and niyam agraha. Same word, but one has a short A and one has a long A. Niyam agraha means to neglect the principles. And niyam agraha means to hold on to the principles so tightly that you don't adjust it according to time, place and circumstance. Both can spoil your devotional service. So we have to know the art of how to preserve the principle and adjust the detail. And if we do that, then we'll practically, spiritually be able to survive and practice effectively, and our movement will remain relevant. But if we don't adjust according to time, place and circumstance, then gradually Krishna consciousness will become harder and harder to practice, and it will become more and more irrelevant in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Manu Samhita can't be changed in principle, but it can be changed in detail. Yeah.
How do we know what is the principle and what is the detail?
Shruti Kirti Guru asked Prabhupada exactly the same question. Shruti Kirti Guru was massaging Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, how do we know what is the difference between a principle and a detail? Prabhupada was quiet. He didn't say anything. And then after some minutes, he turned around and he said, that requires a little intelligence. So that requires a little intelligence to understand what can be adjusted, what can't be adjusted. It must be understood through Guru Sari Shastra, and it must be understood through discussion of the Vaishnavas. Even in the Krishna consciousness movement, we don't agree. Some people think wearing dhoti, kurta and saris is a detail. It can be adjusted if it's no longer. And some individuals feel, no, that's a principle. That's essential. That's an essential part of Krishna consciousness. Which one is right? We could do a survey here. Find out where everyone stands. Generally, in any given movement, you have liberals and you have conservatives. So conservatives are more focused on preserving principles. And liberals are more focused on adjusting details. So which one is more important?
Both.
Both. Yet they often have arguments because they may. So one danger is that if the conservatives preserve the principle so much that they forget to adjust the details, you'll become irrelevant. But the other side is if you begin adjusting details, but in the process you also adjust principles as well, then you water down Krishna consciousness, then you also lost. So you can lose on both sides. So how do we strike the balance? That requires a little intelligence. Therefore we must discuss, we must experiment, we must help each other.
Yeah. Just a small comment. It's interesting because it's like the right brain and the left brain, and the tendency in society is to be completely split, which is just very unhealthy.
Vidyananda Maharaj, he says that the two extremes are important, well, not the two extremes, the two poles are important, just as when you have a bowl, you have two poles. And that bowl allows a string to remain taut, like tight. And when that string is tight, then you can shoot the arrow. So for a movement to be effective, you need conservatives and you need liberals. And then you need them to be able to have a healthy discussion with respect and come to the golden mean in the middle. So some movements died because they became irrelevant, and other movements died because they became diluted. So we have to avoid both. Yes?
That's the difference always between duality and polarity. I mean, yes. Always are there, but duality means you fight. So
yes, yes.
I think you're right.
Yeah, we always. One person said to me, there's my opinion, there's your opinion, and then there's the truth. So we think my opinion is the truth, the other person thinks their opinion is the truth, but the reality is I have an opinion, you have an opinion, and the truth is probably something in the middle, outside of both of us, because we both have captured elements of the truth. So therefore, Prabhupada said the success of our movement will be based on unity and diversity. Generally, what happens in a movement is where we see someone has a different opinion to us, we immediately think that's wrong, or we think they're in Maya, or we think like, okay, clearly that person is not chanting their rounds, you know, because they don't agree with the way I see Krishna consciousness. But it's possible that we can have different opinions. But we have to find that unity. That's why in the community is so important that we have, like when you make a sabji, then you need like salt, you need like turmeric, you need chili. If you're from Gujarat, where I am, they also put sugar in everything. In the sabji, dal, everything has sugar. So it's interesting that all of them are important in their right combination. And like in a community, like here's a community. Now some people in this community will be like salt. They're very quiet, they get on with their service, they're in the background, no one ever really glorifies them, but their service is so important. Like, have you ever heard someone glorify the cooking? Like, the salt in that dish was like perfect. But the moment the salt is not there, you'll hear it, right? So some people in a community are like salt. Some people in a community are like turmeric. They give color, very eccentric. Some people are like chili, you know, like, gotta be careful what you say, you know, they can like passion. Some people are like sugar, very sweet, very nice, very. So all are important, but we have to find how to create a unity amongst that and bring it together nicely. So, yeah.
It seems like, I mean, it's very difficult to implement Varnashrama. And one thing that seems difficult is for everybody to find their Varna.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard from Madhavananda Prabhu, he said that that when you come to the Madhyam platform, then you can see for yourself what is your varna. So it seems like the process of Krishna consciousness might be, important
to
stress that, yeah. So everybody can come up to a platform where they actually can see and be honest about Varna.
Yeah, you see, when in a neophyte stage, we're very concerned what people think about us. We're very concerned about being honored and glorified. We're very concerned about looking good. And therefore, because of all of these things, we often act outside of our dharma. But when you come to a Madhyam platform, because you are to some extent detached from that and you have a higher vision, your ability to find your dharma is much greater because it's not skewed by materialistic conceptions. Also, as a Madhyam, you have a greater awareness of yourself. A Kanista doesn't really... we think we know ourselves, but actually we don't really know ourselves. As we practice in Krishna consciousness, we get to know ourselves. However, one thing that can help us find our dharma is also sources outside of ourselves. So therefore we have Shiksha Gurus, we have many devotees, Vaishnavas who know us, who love us, who have some spiritual advancement. And through their advice and guidance, one can find their dharma even if they don't themselves are not aware of it. One English painter, he says, it's difficult to see the picture when you're inside the frame. See, we can't really even see ourselves, therefore we have others. Therefore, in traditional Varnashram, what would happen? Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanta Guru Ritam Acharan Dasavan Nicho Guru Sudrita Soritam. At the age of 5, you immediately go to the Gurukul. And there you learn character, you learn, and you develop a deep friendship with your Guru. And then your Guru just observes you for 20 years. And then by the time you're 25, you have such good character, you have such friendship with your guru, and the guru has such spiritual advancement, and on top of that, they've seen you for 20 years. It's like they just look at you and say, this is what you're meant to do in your life. And you're just like, yeah, this is what I'm meant to do in my life. Boom, finish. But we don't have that facility now. Like, it's like we're on our own, and we're trying to figure it out, so it's difficult. So yeah, one factor in finding your dharma is definitely spiritual advancement. But in the meantime, we still have to keep placing ourselves somewhere in this world. So I give three A's if you want to find your dharma. First thing is assess. Look at Shastra, see what it explains. What is a Kshatriya? What is a Vaishya? Do a personality test. You know, even if you do Kami personality tests, it can help you actually. There's something on the internet called 16personalities.com. I'm not a proponent, I don't get money for this. But it's very good actually, it's free, you can do it. And it gives you a very good awareness of who you are, what your strengths are. You think like, when you look at it, you think, wow, I'm actually like this. That's incredible, you know? And then it tells you, these are the things you can invest more time in. So the first thing is, assess your own personality. How many people here have ever done a personality test? Oh, quite a few, basically. Maybe half have it, so you can try it. So first thing, if you want to find your dharma, is assess yourself. Second thing is ask. Ask others who know you. Ask others, you know, get guidance. And the third thing is just attempt. Attempt different things. If you think you're a teacher, try it out and see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, just change. We have to, in this day and age, we're not going to find dharma in like one go like that. We just got to go on a journey and find it. But yeah, ultimately, through deeper spiritual realization, you find dharma. Yes?
Why don't we, for example, we read dharma shastras to find dharma? Should one speculate, or should one actually consider reading and studying the relevant scriptures? Because now it sounds like you're proposing, and I'm not saying you're doing, now it sounds like you're proposing speculation. And this is not my personal opinion, but it might seem.
Yeah, it might sound like speculation. You see, even when we're reading Dharma Shastra or any Shastra, we're reading through our own lens. A Kanista sees the Shastra through their emotions, but a Madhyam sees their emotions through the Shastra. So if you're a Kanista and you're reading Dharma Shastra, you may not actually draw the message from Dharma Shastra that you need to read, that you need to get. In the English language it said, me and you, we both read the Bible day and night, you read white, you read black, I read white. So two people read the same thing, but they come up with a completely different conclusion because they're all seeing through the lens of their own emotions. Therefore, Guru Sadhu Shastra. Therefore, take guidance. And then learn Shastra. So then you may say, well, why don't you just stop there? Take guidance. But then how many of us have deep relationships with Shiksha Gurus? How many of us lived in a Gurukul from age 5 where we had a Guru seeing us for 20 years who can then tell you based on Shastra what your dharma is? We don't have that. So then ultimately, Yukta Vairagya, we got to just work in this world with what we have. We're not going to directly get it from Shastra. Even Guru, we don't have to fully decode the Shastra. Therefore, I'm saying we have to try different things until we come to the Madhyam platform. So in Krishna consciousness, there's an ideal of how we should do stuff. There's the real of where we are, creatures of Kali Yuga. So this is where we are, that's the ideal. At least we should try to look at what's achievable at this point and then move towards the ideal. Make sense?
Yes, this makes sense.
But like this, we don't go to the Gurukul and so on, and we don't have some at our parents.
We still got time.
And our parents, can they like, you know, see what you know, they can be as our teacher or guru or something?
Yes, that's possible. Yeah. The parents, if they have insight into Shastra, and of course they've observed you. And also the parents have to have the spiritual advancement. Remember yesterday I was talking about parenting in the modes? And one, sometimes what parents can do is they try to live some of their dreams through their children. So as long as the parent is spiritually advanced enough to know Shastra and is completely detached in the sense that they're only looking at your dharma and your purpose and not projecting any desires through you, definitely they can.
Then also it cannot be only parents, because it's Guru, Sadhana and Shastra.
But if parents are devotees, then they're considered Guru and Sadhu.
Guru and Sadhu.
Guru doesn't just mean Diksha Guru. It means someone who you have a relationship with, an ongoing relationship with, who is guiding you based on Shastra.
I have a question with regards to the services and our dharma. In case maybe we might have found our Svadharma, but we have only opportunities to do services which are completely unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
How can we just take those opportunities until we sort of find our way to do a service that's more related to our dharma, or our inclination, our nature, or is it completely different when we're dealing with the spiritual energy?
Good question. When devotees come into the ashram, then we obviously we have to engage them in service. So what we do in the ashram is we engage devotees in three types of services. One type of service should be the service that you're naturally inclined towards. That's like the service which is your dharma. But then we also give devotees services which are just the need of the day. It's just like, this is what we need. We need to clean the toilets, Guru. And then we also, the third type of service, is we give them a difficult service. Now the first type of service gives you the gift of inspiration. When you serve in your dharma, it's like naturally you feel inspired. If someone's a kirtaniya and you just tell them, okay, Sunday feast kirtan, it's 3 hours, then just for those 3 hours, then absolute bliss, and they're serving Krishna. So the first type of service gives you inspiration. The second type of service gives you mercy. Like, because when you tell that kirtaniya, okay, I know you still got an hour left on your slot, but we really need someone to wash the pots in the kitchen. You're like, but that's not inspiring, but it doesn't matter, you're going to get mercy. And mercy carries us, yeah? Inspiration is carrying us, but mercy is carrying us. And when you do the third type of service, a service that's difficult, it develops dependence on Krishna. It develops a sense of prayer to Krishna, reliance on Krishna. So all of these ingredients are important. If someone does only services which are difficult, then basically they're a ticking time bomb. At one point it's going to self-destruct. Right? If someone only is given services that are the need of the day, how long are they going to survive? You just feel like the spare wheel. Right? But the interesting thing is, if you only do services you're inspired in, you may stay in Krishna consciousness, but you may not advance as much as you can. Because, yes, you like to do kirtan, but how much are you crying for Krishna? And how much of it is just musical? So therefore, we don't only do the services we're inspired in, we also try to do these other things, and that helps us to grow. And of course, the best is if you can find a service which you're inspired by, which is the need of the day, and which also forces you to grow. That's like, wow, you're doing well. So all these factors are important. We want to be in our dharma, but ultimately, we want to transcend our dharma. So Prabhupada says, when a boy and girl are in love, it doesn't matter where they go, what they do, the main thing is that they're together. Right? So Prabhupada says, in the beginning of spiritual life, we're very concerned. I want to do this type of service because we feel very connected. But in a mature stage of spiritual life, it's like, I can do anything for Krishna, as long as I can serve Krishna. Yeah, so.
Yes. Just a little comment on like finding your purpose. It's helpful to focus on the process of what you would be doing rather than the result. Like a lot of people, they choose based on the result that they will get, not on the process of what they're actually going to be doing.
Yes.
So you might want to be a rock star, but you're like, are you doing it for the money or for the girls, or are you doing it because you actually like enjoy playing the music?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. And part of that is also to understand what is success as well. When we have the wrong definition of success, then we often choose the wrong dharma as well, because we choose something which leads to a success that ultimately is false. So, Yes.
The question is basically, does dharma and adharma change through the ages, or is it our ability to fulfill our dharma that is influenced by time, place and circumstance? What I mean is more the sin and what is sin and what is should be supposed to be done, does it change? Or is it our ability that changes on time, place and circumstance?
Yeah, good question. Bhagavatam explains, dharma dushakshad bhagavat pranitam. No one can create dharma. Only Bhagavan can create dharma. So no one can create dharma. Bhagavan creates dharma. Dharma comes from Shastra. So dharma does not change. But again, how we practice that dharma may be adjusted according to time, place and circumstance to match our ability. Right? So that's why the acharyas are so important, because what they're explaining is that this is dharma. Therefore, what happens? In every age, there is a yuga dharma. Kriteya dhyayato vishnum dhyatayam rajato mukhe dvapare paricharyayam kalota dharikirtana. Satya, what is the dharma? Dhyan, meditation. Treta, what is the dharma? Yajna, sacrifice. Dvapara, what is the yajna? Archana, deity worship. And in this age, what is the dharma? Kirtan. So therefore, the dharma is to connect with Krishna. But the dharma may be altered in its practice for our purposes according to what we're capable of. This Prabhupada says you cannot meditate, you cannot do yajna, you cannot do all these things. Does that mean you should not follow dharma? No, you should follow dharma. But in this age, to follow dharma, only chanting Krishna's names. So dharma doesn't change, our ability does change. And therefore, the acharyas adjust and give us different ways to follow dharma. Yeah.
Follow-up question, if I may.
Yeah.
Does the current yuga dharma cancel the previous yuga dharma's, practice? For example, in our yuga, if someone is able to do harinam, sankirtan, is he not supposed to do the yuga dharmas of the previous ages? Should he renounce yajnas? Should he renounce charity and meditation?
No, because we see, even though we do harinam sankirtan, we still do dhyan. If you receive the Gayatri mantra, then three times a day, dhyayam, stuvam, yasyas, prisandhyam. You must meditate on the Guru three times a day. We still do yajna. Now, in 2 weeks, there will be a vivaha yajna. In marriage, we still do yajna. We don't just bring two people together, have a big kirtan, and say, okay, bus, married. No, we do yagya. Here we have deities, we do archa seva, because, yes, that purifies. However, the point is that even if those three things are not possible, even if those three things are not available, still there is no loss, because within Harinam everything is contained. So basically we take all the help we can get. And if all else fails and there's nothing left, then don't worry. Namno hi yavati shakti bhava nirahadame hare tavad kartam na shaknoti patakam patiti naraha. The shakti of the Nam, the power of the name, is so great that it can incinerate more sins than one can accumulate. Don't try to test this statement, but we'll take it on your word. So yeah, Nam is enough. Nam is enough. Someone was, yeah, gentleman I was telling me about Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji. I was very fortunate to meet Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji in Vrindavan. And of course he would speak different things, but for the most part he would just chant Hare Krishna. And someone would ask him a question, you know, and he would just kind of chuckle and just chant Hare Krishna. Apparently someone put their ear to his heart and they heard the holy name resounding from his heart. So Prabhupada said he has understood Harinam is everything. So there's no loss. But because we don't have that faith, we don't have that purity of absorption, we take advantage of other things. When Prabhupada was installing Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan, then Prabhupada had all these yagyas and everything. And then later on he said, actually we don't need to do any of these yagyas or any of these. Chanting Hare Krishna would have been enough. But I did it because all the other smarter brahmanas, they will otherwise criticize us. So Prabhupada had that faith that the holy name is enough. But we still take advantage of all these things. Yes?
My question is that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, there's usually a lot of inspiration, and with that comes intention in the beginning, like with every obeisances and with every round one chants, it's often filled with sincere intention. But over the years, usually, it tends to become a bit of a... You tend to become a bit like a machine, like the moment you enter the temple, you just fall to the ground. Not necessarily because you're thinking, I'm falling at the lotus feet of the Lord, it's just kind of mechanical. So my question is kind of, after a long time of practice, how do we keep the intention with every holy name, with every obeisances, and honoring Prashad and, you know.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Ridayananda Maharaj used to say, you have to join the Krishna consciousness movement every single day. It's not that I joined the movement on this year or on this day. No, you have to join it every single day. You see, as we go through spiritual life, I don't think we can practice Krishna consciousness in the same way. We have to always upgrade, evolve, and enhance the way in which we practice Krishna consciousness. I think we have to keep it fresh. We have to accept new challenges. We have to explore new things. We have to meet new devotees, go deeper in our understanding of something. I think when we go out of our way to create variety and a variety of experiences and challenges and new aspirations, and we aim to discover more and explore more the world of Krishna consciousness, then I think we it brings a lot of life. That's not to say that someone can't just do the same thing and stay in the same place, and they may be able to, but for most of us, we need to. That's why, you know, taking on a new challenge in your service, taking on, exploring Shastra, maybe things you have not read, or parts of Prabhupada's books, and going deeper. going to the Dham, meeting saintly people and trying to understand how do different people practice Krishna consciousness, what can I draw from their experiences. Going on a retreat, taking some time out of your normal routine of Krishna consciousness and having it absorbed, like for example, Sachidananda Maharaj, every Kartik you go to Vrindavan and he'll completely go off the grid and he'll be in some place, no one really knows where he is for 1 month and you won't see him. And he's just chanting many, many rounds. Imagine you would do that for 1 week. Just as an experiment. Imagine you would do that for 1 week, chant 64 rounds every day. Maybe after 1 week, we wouldn't be the same person. Something's going to change. Right? So, and after 1 month, he like appears. like the sage appearing from Naimisharanya or something. You can see it. They always say that's the most ecstatic class of the year for such a number of guys. Like after his Kartik Vrata, he comes to Krishna Balaram temple and he gives the morning class. And it's just like brimming with realization. So Krishna consciousness is an adventure. It's an adventure of so much to explore, so much to find, so much to experience. But we have to be spiritual entrepreneurs and go for the spiritual wealth. If you ever went to Sachinanda Maharaj's house, he used to have a house in Goloka Dham, I think, and it's like everywhere you go in his house, there's all these like these things of like items of mercy that he collected, and this is a leaf from this tree, and this was given to me by one, and this book was, Prabhupada's, and it's all these different, he's like a mercy hunter. So we should be like that. Go where the mercy is. Go where you can find some boost. Go to Vraj for Kartik and get the mercy. And I think then it remains very fresh. It's 8:30.
One of the other days you were saying that if we have some, and I don't remember the words.
Enmity?
Enmity? To the devotees?
Yeah.
And then we tried to, it struck so deep when I spoke with a friend about it, and then we couldn't remember exactly how you said and what to do and how to approach it. So would you take that point again? Because it was such an important point.
The goal of life. It's not the goal of life, is it?
The goal of life is not to remember all the terrible things that have happened to us, or all the injustices, or all the insensitive things we've been on the receiving end of. The goal of life is to remember all the amazing things that Krishna is doing for us at every moment. But the thing is, when our mind is filled with all this negativity about how I've been unjustly treated and how I've been the victim, then there's no space in our consciousness to remember how kind Krishna is, how kind the Vaishnavas are, how kind Prabhupada was that he came here and he just gave us an opportunity. We can't remember any of that because we're too hung up on all these other negative things. Does that mean we weren't victims? Does that mean we weren't mistreated? Probably we were. That's the material world. Unfortunately, you made the decision to come here. But somehow or other, to let that go, it's like I mentioned, what does the Avanti Brahmana say after his mature realization of everything? Nayam jano me sukha dukha hetu na devatatma vihakarma kalaha Manam param kalama mananti samsara chakram parivartayat. I used to think other people were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. I used to think the devas were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. I used to think that maybe the planets were against me. They were causing my suffering. I was wrong. I used to think that my own karma was the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Mana param karanam amananti. My own mind is the supreme cause of all the suffering. So somehow or other, all this negativity, holding burning coal while waiting to throw it at someone, but getting completely burnt in the meantime, is very, very destructive. But how do we go beyond it? How do we just let go? It's very difficult. Not so easy. You see, there's a cup of water here, and if I put a handful of salt in here, you know, it's going to taste very salty. But now imagine we fill up this whole room with water and I put a handful of salt. You just absorb it. You won't taste anything. Unless and until we become very deep in our vision of life, unless we're living, Prabhupada uses this beautiful term in the Gita. He talks about the sages who are living with the vision of eternity. Who's that person who's living with the vision of eternity? When our consciousness is so big, when our goal is so great, when our understanding of the journey that we're on is so broad, then all these things that happen in this world, as they say in France, c'est la vie. What to do? So I think we have to. Anyway, it's so easy for me to sit here and say that on a mic. Yeah, we hurt, people hurt us. But it becomes more painful if you dwell on it anyway. So somehow we need to learn to move on. Pray for me, I can follow this. Yes, Lord.
In one of your tests, you spoke about everything is dependent on desire, and then you made like a picture that what do we want? It becomes indulgent, Could you explain in more in detail what these different steps were?
On the ocean metaphor?
Yeah.
The metaphor of the ocean and Krishna consciousness?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, some people are on the beach and they're just looking at the people in the ocean having a great time, and that's their enjoyment. So you know, like some people are like spectators in the Krishna consciousness movement. They come and they kind of watch all the other devotees, and they're kind of there, but they're not really in it, but they're kind of watching it. And it's kind of nice. It's nice also to watch. I used to do that. When I was on book distribution, it was actually really nice to just sit on the side and watch the good, like, empowered book distributors distribute books. Have you ever done that? It was fascinating. I just sit on the side and these empowered book distributors would just like call someone, you know, and then, you know, before you know it, in like 1 minute, they've got like books up here, you know, all them. Like, the person's walking away, this is like completely like, even they don't know what's going on. The book distributor doesn't know what's going on, they don't know what's going on. I'm looking at it, like, what's going on here? It's just like the whole thing is transcendental. It's very nice. I could do that all day. Not just because I was spacing out, but it's actually really nice. So some people are just spectators. And that's what they do their whole life. And then some people kind of go into the edge of the sea and they kind of dip in. And it's kind of like, I'll give something to Krishna. One for Krishna, five for me. Two for Krishna, ten for me. Like they have some concern, it's calculative. They have some concern that, no, I'll give something to Krishna. Of course I'll give something to Krishna. Krishna's nice, I'll give something to him. But you know, I also gotta take care of myself. I also gotta make sure that, you know, there's something left for me. So then holding back. So then you get spectators, then you get calculated. But those who are just calculating. No, I did my one round for the day. I did it. I told you I'd do one round. I did it. And then you get some people who are they're right in the middle of the ocean. So those are the ones you think, wow, those are the committed ones. They're the ones, you know, 16 rounds, 4 regs, always in dhoti. They're into it. They're right in the middle of it. I mean, they've given themselves to it. You see, in Krishna consciousness, there's an external surrender and there's an internal surrender. So at some point, people make it to the point of the external surrender. So they tick all the boxes. They meet all the criteria, you know, dress, you know, rounds, regs, everything. But it's still an external surrender. Jiva Goswami says that there are three types of duplicitous people. One is known as a dhana kapat, one is known as a bala kapat, and one is known as a prema kapat. Kapat means like a crooked person. So dhana kapat means one who has many things they can give to Krishna, gives some of it but holds a lot back. Then he says, later on, when you transcend that stage, you can become a balakapat. So a balakapat means one who gives all of their material possessions to Krishna, but they hold back their endeavor. They hold back their effort. And then he says there is premakapat, who give all of their material facilities, they give even a lot of effort, but they don't give their heart. So the person in the middle on the ocean is like that. Externally they give, but internally they haven't. And then the one who's diving in is internally looking for Krishna, crying for Krishna. As we said, crying for Krishna. Who is crying for Krishna? Who wants to find Krishna? Like Socrates, he gave that example, no? And then finally, Socrates brought him up and he just gasped for air. And he said, what's the meaning of this? So he said, you wanted to know, right? What it takes to achieve spiritual perfection. He said, yeah, why did you do this? He said, at the point when I lifted you out of the water, what were you thinking about? The person said, all I could think about was getting a gasp of air. He said, when you reach this level of intensity, you will achieve perfection. What does that mean to us in our life? It means that we only go deep in the ocean when we realize the bottom line is, what did I do today to find Krishna? Am I finding Krishna? Am I looking for Krishna? So that's the one who grows deep. So that's the kind of metaphor, one metaphor that's good. I don't know, does that help?
Where did you get
this?
Probably just made it up.
I don't think it's not Shastri, it's just an observation. Observation based on Shastri principles,
Prabhu, your unconscious mind is made of Shastra.
I don't know. I think we can also do like that. Maybe one day I was at the beach or something and I just clicked. I don't know.
Srinamar says it's also dive deep into the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was inspired by this, you know, like the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami talks about the nectar of the ocean of devotional service and how we have to become deep divers. And Rupa Goswami uses the word makara. So he says you have to become like a shark who is diving deep within the ocean, not just the ones on the surface.
And get the jewels.
And get the jewels, exactly. Yeah, right.
We have this our small community up here in Sweden, in a remote place, and we have not so many traveling preachers and sannyasis visiting. And I mean, we have been traveling with the youth a lot in Europe and at this. And my question is, could you give some advice? Because we have now this, you can see here, 30 youth growing up, and they are so fired up about Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, Krishna's mercy. And we have also some older devotees in this community, and we see now this new, you know, generation coming up. If you could give some input, some you know, what is important, you know, to develop.
Developing the community?
Yeah, to help the youth and develop the community, and you know, we are thinking, you know, forward 10, 20 years.
Yeah. Well, today, this morning, I had the fortune of spending some time with Janmalaya Prabhu, and he was telling me about his early days in Krishna consciousness, and I was touched. It was so inspiring. The spirit of that time was incredible. Prabhupada just came, and all these amazing devotees just came to Prabhupada and just left it all behind to serve the movement, serve the mission. And it was such an adventure, and it was such a... every day amazing things would happen. They'd go out of the comfort zone, and it wasn't just a religion, it wasn't just rules and regulations, but it was something amazing was happening. It was the Hare Krishna explosion. And I think if the disciples of Prabhupada, the older devotees in the yatra who really experienced that buzz, can share that mood, that spirit with the youth, so that the youth, all of us, I think I'm still a youth as well, we can catch that spirit of adventure. See, Krishna consciousness is not religion, it's an adventure, it's the greatest journey, it's the most amazing thing, it's where you find the most amazing experiences. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Adyapiha Shei Lila Kaha Gauraroi Kona Kona Bhagyavan Dekhi Bharapoi. He says the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are going on even today. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva are performing their pastimes even today. Kona Kona Bhagyavan Dekhi Bharapoi. But only the most fortunate souls will be able to witness it. So Prabhupada said, ISKCON is the latest chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So if you're a young person, you want adventure, you want like a buzz, you want to see something happening in life. You want to have school. One devotee, he told me, don't have a life in which you have loads of possessions to show people. Have a life in which you have loads of stories to tell people. So if you want to have the most interesting life, if you want to see the most magical things, if you want to have the most mystical experiences, if you want to, in the midst of all of that, find Krishna, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is the movement in which to do it. And so we have all these amazing devotees here who experienced that with Srila Prabhupada in the early days of the movement. And by hearing from them and catching that spirit, if this generation will then live in that spirit and say, like, yeah, we're going to go out there and we're going to conquer Sweden. Right? And why? The sky's the limit is such an amazing preaching field. Like, we were just in Stockholm. So many people and so much opportunity. So either you can say, well, there's no devotees here, it's so difficult, we don't have any devotees. Or you can say, Krishna put me here and he's given me the opportunity to be a pioneer. What do you want to see? Tribhuvanath Guru, some of you may know Tribhuvanath Guru, Prabhupada told him to go to Scotland. And then he said to Prabhupada, there's no association in Scotland. And Prabhupada said, you become the association. So yeah, it's a great adventure. The pioneering days of Krishna consciousness were in the 70s and 80s. But you know what? The pioneering days are even now. Because there's all these places where no one's ever heard of the devotees. So I think when Krishna consciousness becomes an adventure, then it becomes exciting. If it's just a religion, if it's just an institution, if it's just like, okay, we got to show up for the program, it's a bit dry. But when it's an adventure, then you think, wow, yeah, let's do it. I feel like my most magical, memorable, mystical, moving experiences in Krishna consciousness have been while trying to share Krishna consciousness with others. Amazing things happen. So many stories to tell. Okay, some thoughts. Maybe we should finish there, it's very late. Okay. Thank you so much.
I would like to thank you very much for coming here.
Thank you for inviting
tomorrow
me.
Tomorrow you will leave very early.
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody knows this. But thank you very much for all your classes and all your association. It has been very nice. And if we hope that you come, as Ramachar had invited you for every year.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for your kind encouragement and welcoming us and hosting us. And everything was wonderful. I'm so happy to be here. And till the next time.
At least once a year. And maybe you don't know, but we are already planning that the boys, we will see, will go to the manor.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come back also. Don't worry, they won't stay.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Vanchak, I'll put a little bit of a story. Thank you so much. Ivana, Ravanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Gurma. Krishna Seva, Vishnu Sangha, Ki
Jai,
Guru Bhadi, Ki
Jai. Disgrace of the Bapa Bhu, Ki
Jai.